Hi, I'm John O'Donnell with Microsoft Dynamics ISV Evangelism, and today I'm sitting with the CRM Engineering for Enterprise team in the Advana campus at Microsoft in Bellevue. So maybe we can start with some introductions. Do you just want to introduce yourself?
Thanks, John. My name is Amir Jaffrey. I'm a program manager with the Engineering for Enterprise team. I've been with the Microsoft CRM for almost 4 years now. I was on the setup team and then internationalization before I moved to the PM role with this team.
I'm Murat Ostrand. I'm the group manager for CRM Engineering for Enterprise team. I've been with CRM for 2 years, and I've been 15 years in Microsoft.
And my name is Jim Toland, and I'm the content manager for the team. And I've been with CRM for about a year. I had a year before that with a worldwide partner group, and then prior to that I had 6 years with Microsoft Learning.
Excellent. So why don't we start with some background? I mean, why was the CRM Engineering for Enterprise team created in the first place?
CRM Engineering for Enterprise team have a couple of missions. One of them is basically understand the enterprise scenarios and adapt the product and create interim solutions and white papers and guidances to enable those enterprise scenarios. Then the most important part of our job is to bring back that knowledge into the product team. We are part of the development team itself, so we are at the core of the CRM engineering team. We work very closely with developers, product managers, program managers, test and user experience teams to make sure that the enterprise customers are heard and those scenarios are catered for. And that affects our next versions of the products. In the day-to-day job, we create white papers, benchmarks, and anything that we're very flexible on that whatever the field is asking us, we evaluate and prioritize and answer their questions and help them to make sure that they cater their enterprise needs.
So what were some of the early successes or some of the early content that you put out?
Well, Amir can talk about a couple of those.
So I can talk about that. So the first content we actually worked on was we wrote a paper on how to support encryption on the Windows client using EFS. And that was a shorter term project. You know, we had a lot of people, especially in the public sector, requiring the CRM client machines, laptop client machines, to be more secure in case of theft and loss. So we addressed that first. And then one of the projects we did after that was a benchmark on CRM 3.0. which we scaled up to 6,000 concurrent users, which was published. Now, we do a lot of work around benchmarks and performance comparisons and so on and so forth. The one which is gets a lot of press is that 24,000 concurrent user benchmark on CRM4.
Yeah.
I think it made quite a serious statement in the industry to show that Microsoft CRM is very serious in the enterprise space, and we clearly scaled. There's no questions about it anymore. None of our competitors, we're basically in the same league as all of our competitors, so there's no issues there. That was actually performed with the SQL Server team.
Okay.
We went to the SQL Server labs. We engaged them for just a week, and we went in there with SQL 2008 and Windows 2008, and we got that done.
Now, you were using quite a sizable SQL Server, if I've heard correctly. Can you comment on the sort of hardware that you had access to?
Yeah, so we were using an ES7000. It was configured halfway through. So
okay.
We had 16 processors, and we had 64 gig of RAM. It actually goes up to 128 gig of RAM, so we did not use the whole box itself. And the idea behind that was just to see how far we can push it. Now, the interesting thing about that benchmark was that 24,000 wasn't necessarily the limit of CRM per se. The tools will scale beyond that. We used a fairly diverse benchmark, and we got up to 1 million transactions an hour. So very,
wow.
Very significant workload. This wasn't your, I'm going to do, we've seen some of our competitors' benchmarks doing a bit of this and a bit of that with some users. These were all 24,000 concurrent users, all operating at the same time.
And what sort of response rate were we getting?
We were at 0.4 seconds.
I would say it was a sub-second response rate, and what you're saying is what I heard in the field. People were assuming that you had one user creating 8 records in a day, and I said, no. They were actually creating records constantly through the day, literally with sub-second response time. So that benchmark just blew the community away. So that was great.
Absolutely. And I think with benchmarks, we typically try and keep it sub-second. I think it's 1.7. But the idea is to keep it sub-second, to keep it a reasonable response time over. And when we publish these benchmarks, we don't just publish the benchmark. This isn't like a marketing benchmark for us. We're a technical team. We're all engineers. So what we do is actually publish the benchmark and the actual workload itself and the tools, which is the performance toolkit. So essentially a customer can take the benchmark and say, oh, I have a similar environment, I want to reproduce it with a different workload, you can do that. So we give the actual workload, the entire specifications, absolutely everything. So you know, we want to be as transparent as possible.
So if a client wanted to test how it would scale up to, say, 2,000 users, they could use your methodology and tools to do that. That's great.
Absolutely. And the CRM performance toolkit developed by the performance team in the Dynamics team itself is actually available on CodePlex.
Right.
And it's a free download. And it includes source code behind the test cases as well. So it's not just us, you know, saying, oh, here's how we do accounts. You can do it any way you want, and you can measure it. It also integrates with Visual Studio, which is very, very powerful. The reporting engine in Visual Studio is amazing.
Yeah.
So you get all of that. We did a lot of other work as well in the performance space. We did some work with comparing 3.0 and 4.0, saying on the exact same hardware, what are the performance improvement there?
Okay.
And there was some significant improvement there. We did a lot of work with understanding what the network improvements were. You know, from moving from 3.0 to 4.0, we've gone from a departmental to being in 4.0 especially, we're a very global customer base now. We have people deploying CRM across the world, saying, you know, say a database sitting in Redmond and perhaps customers in Japan, Australia, and Europe. And we wanted to quantify the improvements in WAN performance in 3.0 to 4.0 as well.
Okay.
So we did a lot of testing in that area, and there's a paper published there as well, which talks about the improvements from 3.0 to 4.0. And they're actually a very, very significant. You know, the savings from round trips and data sent back and forth is between like 50 and 90%.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I actually wasn't aware of that paper. And what's interesting is that I see lots of requests from companies out in the field saying, you know, we've got a globally deployed CRM system. How much bandwidth do you use? So again, it's almost like you guys predict what the field needs and gets out there before people even recognize the need for it.
One of the biggest challenges on that kind of deployment is it hurts any web applications, the high latency.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that we are working on at the moment. There's going to be a guidance paper is going to come out how to optimize the system for high latency networks.
Really?
And to be honest, bandwidth, you might have a huge bandwidth, but if you are working between Southeast Asia or Latin America versus US, then latency is an issue that you can get away with. I mean, even you invest a lot of money on your network.
Right.
So we think of our responsibility as educating the CRM community, developer, partner, and ISV community, right? So in a case like this, as opposed to approaching the problem by saying, here's some benchmarks across the WAN, you know, we look at it and say, no, given your business scenario, how would you optimize for a WAN deployment? And how would you customize for a WAN deployment? What kind of things would you do? I mean, us understanding the inner workings of the product, we can give advice like that. And then looking at that, you can actually see significant savings just on the same functionality after optimizing and customizing the app.
Right.
So there's a lot of interesting work.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of the things that our team also initiates quite a lot of things, like whenever there's a new technology comes up, like let's say Hyper-V and et cetera, our team kind of initiates to support for Hyper-V. So we just released our Hyper-V support for the CRM environments for virtualization. Same thing, Amir is working on SQL 2008, and that benchmark was done on SQL 2008 before even it was released. Maybe you can talk about.
Yeah, so SQL 2008 came up with some features like filter indexes, compression, and sparse columns. And what we're looking at right now, it's the project I'm working on right now, is trying to understand, you know, how enabling these features affects CRM performance, especially when you have a large database. And the outcome of this essentially will be some guidance around, you know, given that these features are essentially, you can just turn them on or off in the database, they don't require any code change. Given your database profile, how would you address them? How would you improve performance?
Okay.
And this is the kind of work we do, you know, working with the SQL Server team in this case, but we reach out to other teams like SharePoint and everything else and say, what do you have coming down the pipeline? What can we give our customers today, which will help them in this space?
Right. So Jim, where do you fit into this?
Well, I'm kind of the guy that makes sure that the messaging aspect is actually out and is clear and succinct. I'm also kind of responsible for putting together the processes that make it more repeatable to do these types of things that we're doing. I work closely with, as Murat had mentioned, the UX team, some of the guys in the field, partners as well, to try to leverage what existing materials they have. And then help to make it more consistent, distribute it so we get multiple perspectives on it, and then come out with a more solid piece.
Right.
One of the recent things I've released was the Nuts and Bolts, what we have, a Nuts and Bolts series, and it's an article that's dedicated to the offline synchronization process.
Okay.
And basically what it does is it provides not so much guidance, but kind of like a schematic diagrams of how offline synchronization works and the different pieces that support it. That one's recently been published. We did that with a lot of work internally from the internal product team. However, with that prototype out there, I'm now working on one that deals with security authentication, and I'm working closely with the UK support team and some of the resources they've got there in terms of content as well as the people and knowledge to pull together a second piece. And that's one thing I think that's really important, again, being the small team that we are, is to make things repeatable and as consistent
right.
as possible, but also to make it clear that a lot of what we come out with is dependent upon what we get in terms of information that's leverageable from the field. So, you know, rather than creating something from scratch, if we find a situation where somebody either has done it before or is going through the process right now and hasn't really got any materials to work with, I'll work with them to try to capture that so that we can vet it and then publish it for other people to use in the future as well.
So what's a typical length of time it takes to, you know, once you've decided that you want to create a specific asset? I mean, obviously, it'll vary from asset to asset, but is there sort of an average time, like a turnaround time?
I mean, it changes from asset to asset. And the other thing as well, we are a little bit different than the rest of the product team. We are much more reactive to the field needs.
Right.
So if field comes up with a scenario that is really urgent and important and something that's a big deal hanging on the end of it, then we'll drop our existing work and make sure that that's been released and worked for.
Oh, so you have that level of flexibility?
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
I mean, things like SQL 2008 new features is important, but it's not time critical. While if you have one of the first thing we did was the encryption for clients side encryption for the thing that a huge government deal was based on that
right.
yes or no, and that takes the priority. So sometimes you might be working halfway through an asset, then stop it, then do other things and come back to it afterward.
Okay.
Or similarly, we might have an asset that comes up that's fairly well developed from the field that doesn't take off. I mean, it comes kind of out of the blue, but it's somebody that says, hey, I've got this. Could you look it over and help me get it distributed? And that would take less time than
right.
something to come up with.
So you guys could actually take an existing asset that's out there and then increase
and embellish it, make it more consistent so that it actually, you know, makes sense with the other pieces we have out there and then distribute it for everybody else.
I mean, MCS is a great resource, and BSA is a great resource for us. We work very closely with them.
Yeah, I mean, a great example is the service scheduling papers we released, the benchmark and the best practices with the UK MCS team.
Okay.
Which is something they were developing anyways. They were working on a very large project there, and they had some materials for us, and they said, you know, we have some basic materials, right? And we have some best practices and guidances and everything else. And then we engaged them. We said, okay, given that, we'll just build upon that. So a project like that takes a little less investment from our side. But it's a classic example where our customers and partners and everything else have all these resources typically available, but they need some level of validation or understanding.
Right.
Or because what we do is we take some content and we go to our product team and say, does this stuff make sense? How can we improve it and everything else? So it's basically a win-win, not to use a cliche term. It's a win-win because the customer partner or the consultant, you know, gets some sort of validation on the solution. And from our side, we get some content we can share with the community.
Okay.
And there's one other specific situation I'm working on right now with somebody who's on working with a customer who's on the real cutting edge of things. And the initial interest came to see about whether or not there's some materials available. There's not, because he's on the cutting edge. So I'm working with them to document the best practices around what they're doing today. And that's going to benefit, again, everybody in the long term. But also, some of the things that they're bringing up and some of the issues are things that we can feed back into planning for the future versions of the product.
So does that mean, do you guys take input from the support teams out in Fargo if you see a common issue coming up? Because that's typically the pattern that you see with CRM. It's almost like if you look back in time, you'll just see these, you know, an issue was hot for 6 months and another issue was hot for 6 months. So they feedback to you, to your team, and you take a look and say, well, what can we do to help out?
Support is another resource that we talk regularly, and support, MCS, BSA, those are the guys that we interact with quite a lot,
right.
Partners especially. I mean, we get a lot of feedback from our partners, and they come up with a lot of good suggestions in there as well.
Okay.
Because we're not necessarily a customer team per se.
Right.
You know, what our mission is essentially to go out there and engage with customers, partners, and everything else, and understand what are the prevalent issues in the enterprise space, and what can we do to address them? What best practices can we provide? What benchmarks can we provide? What solutions can we provide? What else can we do in that space? And then, you know, we will typically engage customers if we feel that there's some collateral which we can actually generate and share with the community.
Right.
And we also will look across groups, you know, mentioning the UX group and some of the other teams that are producing content and our team, to try to make sure that the solutions that we're building, A, aren't being developed elsewhere, and B, make sense across the overall scope of content that we're putting out.
Excellent. Well, guys, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today. You're doing some great work, and the community appreciates it, so thanks again.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.